Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On January 29th, 1992, Byron Page was getting ready to go to college and take his driver's exam. He had already been accepted into several schools with more acceptance letters on the way. That afternoon, the 17-year-old decided to take the bus to his favorite movie and music store in West Hollywood, California. He never made it. Despite being a promising student with no issues in his personal life, Byron's case garnered very little attention in a city transfixed by the Rodney King trial. After a short investigation, police believed that he had met with foul play, but his case quickly went cold. Now, after over 30 years, is there a chance that someone out there knows what happened to Byron Eric Page? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Byron Page. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This case was a listener suggestion. They sent me an email with the Charlie Project link. And when I read it, I immediately had a bad feeling that there wouldn't be a whole lot of information on this case. Byron was a Black teenager who disappeared from Los Angeles in 1992 in a time filled with racial tension in the city. But what I wasn't prepared for was how little information there actually was about this athlete and star student who was on the cusp of graduating high school and starting his life. So even though this won't be a long episode, unfortunately, I do want to at least help tell Byron's story because, like I said, he's been missing for over 30 years and barely anything's been written about him. Before we get started, though, it's been a while since we've done Patreon shoutouts and we've had several people join. So we want to give a big thank you to CCG, Rosie W, Kalika T, Ellen C, Eileen C, Laurelyn H, Sarah B, Real Happy Simplega, BJ, Sandy, Heather F, Ruby S, and Ali Babwa. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you all so very, very much.
Remember, if you join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month, you can get these episodes ad-free and also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with all of that out of the way, let's get into the story of Byron Eric Page. Byron Eric Page was born on September 16, 1974, in Los Angeles, California, to Jetty Page. Byron's parents were married and had another son, Byron's older brother, but because there have been so few stories written about Byron's disappearance, I haven't found a single source that has either of their names.
Really?
Yeah. The couple of articles that I was able to find just referred to Byron's father and Byron's older brother.
Wow.
Yeah. Jetty worked as a nurse, and Byron grew up as a smart, athletic, talented kid. He played soccer after deciding football was too rough and tumble for him and made excellent grades in school. He loved comic books and through them developed a love of writing. When he was in the ninth grade, Eric had a history teacher who he later said completely changed his life and influenced him to become a writer. Later in high school, Byron began to lay a foundation for the career he hoped to have in the future. He began writing reviews and articles about comics, offering criticism and recommendations, and setting himself up to be a comic book critic.
I didn't even know that was a thing, but I mean, it sounds awesome.
Yeah. Then, full of enthusiasm and optimism, Byron sent a sample of his work to a magazine in hopes of getting it published. Now, a lot of times when you submit something unsolicited like that to, you know, any publication, you really rarely hear anything back. You know, it's incredibly rare for something like that to get accepted. But even if they don't want it, they usually just won't bother to say anything. But Byron did actually receive feedback on his article, even though the magazine ultimately decided not to publish it. They sent him back a rejection letter full of encouraging words and guidance.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
So though his article wasn't published, Byron saw this as his first win in the publishing world.
I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, if somebody's noticing, you know, what he wrote, regardless of whether it got published or not, I mean, that's still a big deal.
Yeah, and he was in high school, right? And so, you know, I'm sure, like, the letter was something along the lines of, like, hey, you know, you're not quite ready, but, like,
here's some helpful hints.
Yeah, and this is, like, you know, a good start. So that's really got to be encouraging. In addition to playing soccer, reading comic books, and writing, Byron also worked as a summer camp counselor for the YMCA. At one point, he had a job at the Los Angeles International Airport. He made honor roll and had a perfect school attendance record for 5 semesters in a row. When the time came, Byron also aced his PSATs and scored in the top 6% of all the Black students who took the college prep test that year.
Jesus.
He did so well that it earned him an academic scholarship. Byron later wrote about this in an essay saying, quote, "This pleased me and reaffirmed my belief that through hard work and dedication, one's goals can be achieved," end quote. So it should come as no surprise that by January of his senior year of high school in 1992, Eric had already been accepted into several universities. He knew he had a bright future ahead of him and was working hard to achieve his goals. But one thing he didn't have was a driver's license.
Is that normal for L.A.? Do you think?
It's kind of normal for any city there's a lot of public. I think any place where you have a good public transportation system, I think it's pretty normal for kids to not get their licenses as soon as they turn 16.
I mean, hey, I grew up in Pittsburgh and like you have to have your driver's license in Pittsburgh to get anywhere. So,
yeah. So, and I mean, I grew up, in the suburbs and it was the same. Like we had no public transportation whatsoever. But yeah, I think it's fairly common. So that's why on January 28th, 1992, the excited teenager jumped into the family car with his mother. Byron was driving her around so he could practice for his upcoming driver's exam and finally get his license before he graduated high school and went on to start his life. On January 29th, 1992, the very next day after he and his mother, Jetty, had driven around town practicing for his exam, something happened that absolutely no one saw coming. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how the changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIA GNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. Jetty Page was a nurse and often wasn't home to greet Byron when he came in from school. But, you know, he was also 17, so it wasn't weird that he came home from school and nobody was there. So it wasn't uncommon for her, similarly, to come home to an empty house because Byron would often be involved in after-school activities or, you know, would just be hanging out with friends. But what was unusual that day was that Jetty had no idea where Byron had gone. Usually he told her where he was going and when he was supposed to be back, but this time he was gone and Jetty didn't know where to find him. I'm extrapolating here because, you know, I don't have this information, but I remember, and we're a little bit younger, but, you know, it was still like in the 90s, like before cell phones and stuff. Like, I remember we would always leave notes on the back of a bill. Oh. I know your mom. And so like, I know you had a lot of like very nice notepads in your house.
Yes.
We didn't. So it would always be like the back of like junk mail or whatever. And we'd like write the note saying, you know, where we would be, or my mom would write a note in the morning, like telling us before she went to work, like telling us the chores that we had to do before she got home. But either way, but that was a lot of our communication. Yeah. Like between parents and kids at that point was just like notes back and forth. So her coming home to an empty house and having no idea where Byron wasn't typical behavior for her son. But I mean, she wasn't fearing the worst or anything like that.
No, of course. Like, he's a 17-year-old kid. So like, maybe he went out and forgot to write her a note or tell her where he was going.
Yeah. And it's like the afternoon at this point. I mean, we're not talking 11 o'clock at night or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was kind of wondering. So she did decide to call up one of Byron's close friends to see if he was over there. Now, the friend had, in fact, seen Byron that day, but they weren't hanging out. He had actually seen Byron earlier at a bus stop at Overhill and Slauson Streets. According to a 2010 CNN article, the two chatted and Byron said he was heading to West Hollywood to go to a music and video store. This was a store that Byron was a regular at, despite it being 20 miles away. And I've seen some sources describe it as a music warehouse. So that could be the reason why he would like take the long trip to get there. Because, I mean, he's in LA. I'm sure he could find like music and video stores closer than 20 miles away in West Hollywood.
Well, and especially in the 90s, like that was a huge industry in the 90s.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, record stores, video stores. Music stores, whatever you want to call them. But like, you know, I mean, I worked at one in the 90s. You worked at a video store. Mm-hmm. It was like those things were very prevalent all over the country.
Right. Which is why I was like 20 miles. But again, when it said, because they never gave the name of the store, so I couldn't look it up or anything like that. Yeah. But yeah, when it said music warehouse, I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. When she talked to the friend, he was like, oh, yeah, I saw him on a bus. He was going to the store. She's like, okay, good. You know, that's like a normal thing for him to do. So she hung up the phone and figured that Byron would be home soon. But half an hour turned into an hour, that turned into two, and still Byron was nowhere to be seen. He should have been home by then, even if he'd had to take the bus to the store and back. Now she was more than a little nervous, so Jetty and her husband got into their car and drove over to the store in West Hollywood. I mean, it was unlikely, but there was still a chance that Byron had gotten caught up in something. Maybe he'd met friends at the store and decided to go out with them. Or maybe there was an event or something happening at the store and Byron had simply forgotten to let his parents know that he'd be out later than usual. Either way, his parents still weren't thinking that anything truly bad had happened to their son at this point, and, you know, who could blame them? Byron was a smart and responsible kid who could be trusted to do the right thing. Like, he wasn't a troublemaker, you know? But when they walked into the store and asked the clerks if they had seen Byron that evening, each one of them said no. And Byron was there often enough that everybody working at the store knew him, if not by name, by sight.
Okay.
So everybody knew who she was talking about.
Yeah.
And according to all of them, he hadn't been in at all that day. By then, the pages must have had pits in their stomachs. It was now about 7 p.m. and neither of them had seen or heard from their son. Byron's father decided to call the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department and report Byron missing. Sheriff deputies did make a report, but also told the pages that they wouldn't really be looking into the case until at least 24 hours had passed. Later, speaking to reporters, Jetty said, quote, "I'm inclined to think there is not as much of an emergency if a 17-year-old is missing than if a 5-year-old is missing," end quote.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, obviously she's right.
Yeah.
And unless there are extenuating circumstances, police in any jurisdiction aren't likely to go full force on an investigation into a missing 17-year-old just because they weren't home by 7 p.m.
Right.
Police were operating under the likely assumption that Byron was just out and would eventually call his parents or come home. But that's not what his parents thought. So faced with no Byron and no help from police that evening, the pages were left to carry the weight of the investigation on their own. They started driving along the dark streets of LA all through the night, checking anywhere and everywhere that they thought Byron could be. When that turned up nothing, they changed tactics. Remember, this is before everyone had a cell phone, so most people, including Byron, kept phone numbers in an address book. Jetty found Byron's and just went through and called everyone in it, asking if they had seen her son. But no one had. After this, the pages took to the streets again to hang up posters and flyers in the hopes that someone would know something about their son. But for all intents and purposes, it looked like Byron had left the house that afternoon and simply vanished into thin air.
What's the timeline again? His friend saw him at the bus stop around what time?
I don't know. They didn't give any times. That's the tough part about this.
Yeah. Okay.
But that, it was like, after I don't school. Have those details. Yeah. So January 29th, 1992 was a Wednesday.
Okay.
So he would have been in school.
In the 90s, high school gets out, what, between 3 and 4, sometime around there?
It's so hard to say with different school districts. But yeah, I mean, you would think, you know, early, mid-afternoon.
Right. So his friend probably saw him at the bus stop 4, maybe 5, sometime in between there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 20-mile bus ride. It's 20 miles on a bus. It's probably going to be half hour, 40 minutes
mm-hmm.
with multiple stops along the way, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he didn't make it to the store.
But yeah, it's because he was reported missing at 7 p.m. That's the only time I have. So he must have gotten out of school earlier.
Right.
Because his parents thought that he should have been able to go to the store on the bus, do whatever at the store and come back.
Right.
Well before
7 o'clock.
Yeah. I mean, well, they went to the store before 7 o'clock.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he must have gotten out of school earlier. So I think all that timeline would have been moved up a couple hours.
So let's say 3:30, seeing him at the bus stop. He should have been at the music store by 4:10, 4:15, and they get to the store by 7.
Before 7.
So you're looking at, you know, a couple of hours difference. I'm just trying to set the timeline.
Yeah, I mean, the whole timeline does seem tight to me. Yeah, just because he would have, we know it was the afternoon that his friend saw him at the bus stop. It was a school day. And according to everything I've read, they reported him missing at about 7 p.m. And it sounds like they did a lot before they reported him missing.
Right. And then you said that they drove around West Hollywood.
Well, that was after. That was after sure. They reported him missing. But yeah.
If something had happened to him, like along the bus route or whatever, this is West Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like, this is not like wooded areas
where people
would be hiding bodies and shit like that. Like, this is city streets.
Right. And so if something happens to somebody, people notice.
Right.
When it's the middle of the day, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's my point. This
yeah,
is like,
exactly.
There was daylight hours.
Yeah, in a
city streets. There's going to be witnesses to anything that happens. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and these are parents going around the neighborhood, not cops. So
right.
like, you can't even take the whole, like, well, you know, people in this neighborhood don't talk to cops approach, because that's not a thing when it's parents going around asking questions.
Well, maybe. But yes, I mean, not as much.
Yeah.
Nobody yeah, nobody reported seeing anything that day. Like, it, you know, there were no crimes that happened where the victim was unidentified that could have matched up. Nothing like that.
It's really weird.
So finally, when the initial 24 hours were over, the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department decided to move on the case. They arrived at the Page family home to begin the investigation and confirmed something that perhaps all of us guessed already. Inside the home were all of Byron's clothes. He still had money stashed away that he had been saving, and none of his most prized possessions, including his comic books, were missing.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't planning on leaving.
There were zero indications that, you know, that he had planned on going anywhere or doing anything. Byron's actions and his possessions displayed none of the usual characteristics of a runaway, which everyone in Byron's life had already figured out. In 2010, LASD Detective Diane Harris told CNN, quote, "Byron had never hinted he wanted to leave home and he was not considered a runaway," end quote. Within hours, Byron's case had gone from a suspected runaway child to a full-fledged missing person. With renewed resources and manpower, law enforcement, family, and friends took to the streets again, desperate to find the missing pieces of the puzzle that would lead them to Byron. Quote, "As you can imagine, it was a devastating experience for all of us," end quote. That was something that Jetty later told reporters. Now, despite this switch in investigative tactics, and despite the fact that they didn't waste, you know, days or weeks saying he would probably come back, it was really just the first 24 hours, and the fact that Byron was a minor who was a shining star in a school, the case did not seem to make the press at all. Google, newspapers.com, and web sleuths all failed to lead me to a single article that was written about Byron's disappearance in 1992.
Jesus, really?
I could not find a single thing, not even like a sidebar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given what was going on in 92 in LA, I would have expected a small blurb
Right. Like it wouldn't be front page or anything like that. But yeah, I could not find a single thing. And, again, not everything is archived on the internet.
Sure.
But that was wild to me. The only thing that came up on newspapers.com when I searched the different variation of Byron's name were classified ads that his family resorted to publishing in the paper. They said, quote, "Anyone who knows the whereabouts of Byron E. Page, missing since January 29, 1992, family very concerned," end quote.
In the classified section.
In the classified section of the LA Times. And they ran those for a couple of months. After the initial investigation into Byron's disappearance, it seems as though the police forgot about him too. According to that 2010 CNN article, LASD didn't even put Byron into NamUs until CNN called them for an interview.
Why? Why wouldn't they?
Well, so when he went missing in 92, obviously NamUs didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Now NamUs is the national database for missing people. So it's basically, if you have an unidentified body, it gets entered into NamUs. If you have a missing person, it gets entered into NamUs. The idea is that you're going to match up.
Something, yeah.
Right? Obviously, that wasn't a thing in 92, but whenever LA did start putting cases, and I don't know what year they started doing that, yeah, I know it was going to be before 2010, they hadn't done it. And so CNN calls this detective for an interview, and they're like, "Oh yes, interesting. Let me go put this in the system real quick."
Yikes!
Yeah,
not a good look.
I know. And so now he's in, and he's on the Doe Network, and he's on like all of those sites. He's on the LA County like Attorney General site. Like, he's in all of the government sites where you expect him to be. But I'm telling you, like, when you Google this guy, those sites come up. Barely anything on Web Sleuths. The Charlie Project page comes up, like that CNN article, and like two other things. It is wild how there's almost nothing.
And I would assume that the Sheriff's Department didn't release a whole lot as far as what they did as far as the investigation.
Well, it released it to who? Nobody's writing stories on it.
Not even that CNN article, or CNN contacted them, right?
Yeah, CNN contacted them in 2010. So, I mean, 18 years later, there wasn't really much to say. They just gave the basic outline of the case.
Wow.
This whole situation seemed to deeply impact Byron's older brother, who was a student at University of California's San Diego campus at the time. Upon hearing the news about his brother and the desperate search to find him, he wanted to drop out of school and join his family's efforts for searching for Byron. It was only encouragement from their parents that kept his brother in school, but it's clear that he still carries regrets about the whole situation. Whenever Byron is mentioned, his brother apparently closes up and shuts down, like, to this day. So back to the original investigation, you know, once he didn't show up, once it kind of became clear that he didn't take anything with him, investigators began running with the idea that Byron had met with foul play. The search had gone on for long enough that Byron should have reached out to his parents or to law enforcement himself if it were still possible for him to do so. But who would want to hurt Byron? He only ever seemed to make friends wherever he went and never got into trouble. He wasn't exactly the typical troubled teen and didn't fit the profile for an endangered youth. The investigators looked at Byron's case again, hoping to come up with answers. They tracked his movements that afternoon of the 29th and, you know, placed him at the bus stop where he was last seen, but that was about it. They couldn't confirm that Byron had ever made it to the music and video store, or that he had even made it on the bus to begin with.
I'm wondering how in-depth their investigation was at that time.
Yeah.
Because there was so much CCTV, you know, surveillance cameras on stores all over L.A. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm wondering if, like,
if they pulled any of
that?
Yeah,
if they pulled any of it. And, I mean, like, even at the time, I want to say that there was cameras on public buses,
on
too.
On buses, yeah. I don't know if there were or not. But no, because, so I was unsure when I was first reading about this if the sighting at the bus stop was even real.
Right.
Because all the things that I read just said he was last seen at this bus stop. But I was like, well, I mean, maybe it was somebody else. Like, was it actually him? But apparently the friend talked to him.
Yeah.
But we're never given the friend's name. It's just...
His parents talked to the friend?
Yes.
Okay.
And then police did later.
Sure. Yeah. But it wasn't something like, you know, the police interviewed him, you know, a year later.
No. This is all at, like, the
beginning.
At the time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Because I was just thinking that, like, you know, maybe the friend had misremembered the day that he saw them.
No. So Jetty talked to the guy that day.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's definitely not a date issue.
Yeah.
I still don't know, because we really just don't have more details on that. He had been spotted at the bus stop and then had seemed to vanish in the blink of an eye. The clothes that Byron was last seen wearing were a blue and white jacket, a blue baseball cap, and black pants. Some have speculated over the years that Byron had wandered into Blood's territory and had been mistaken for a member of the Crips, a rival gang who wears blue. Now, this thought isn't completely out of left field. Byron's disappearance happened exactly 3 months prior to the LA uprising, after the cops who beat motorist Rodney King were acquitted, and gang violence and racial tensions were high in the city at that time.
Yeah, but again, to the counterargument of that, it's city streets in the middle of the day. Not to say that violence doesn't happen, of course, it does.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't go unnoticed.
Yeah, because drive-by shootings were usually how these things happened at the time, with the victims being left where they lay. In fact, about 6 months later, on July 19th, 1992, two Hispanic teenagers were victims of a drive-by shooting at another bus stop about 7 miles from the one at which Byron was last seen. That made the news. Right. I found an LA Times article about that shooting. So you would think that if a kid was forcibly abducted from a bus stop in the middle of the day, that similarly would have made the news.
Yeah, but why would they even go to that length?
Well, exactly. Well, that's the thing. Nobody knew.
If you're thinking that it's somehow gang related, you know, for wearing the wrong colors or whatever, like, why go to the length of
kidnapping him. Right, exactly.
When the MO of most gangs at the time was drive-bys.
Yeah, and also, you know, it does sound like Byron led a relatively sheltered life, but he's still a kid who grew up in L.A., a black kid who grew up in L.A. Like, you don't just walk around in Bloods territory wearing Crips colors. Like,
yeah,
no basic things like that.
Well, especially given this is something that he has done before. He's gone to this
right
store.
He's ridden that
many
bus.
Times.
Like,
yeah.
He's taken that route.
Exactly.
Like, none of this was new to him.
Yeah. I don't buy that.
Yeah, he wasn't in an unfamiliar area, like right. part of the city or, yeah. you know, anything like that.
I don't buy that.
Yeah, and Byron obviously had no gang connections whatsoever. So for him to be the victim of gang violence would have to have come down to mistaken identity or wrong place, wrong time. But neither of those explains the complete absence of a body.
Right.
Some have theorized that Byron accidentally witnessed something he shouldn't have that afternoon and was killed in order for the perpetrators to cover their tracks. Or that perhaps someone spotted Byron sitting at the bus stop that afternoon and mistook him for someone else. Now, it could be not gangs, but that he was kidnapped by like some other type of criminal. And by the time they realized they made a mistake and taken the wrong guy, it was already too late for Byron.
I mean, kind of far-fetched, but sure.
Yes, it does seem unlikely, but that's actually a current leading theory as to what happened to Angela Hammond, who was kidnapped from a phone booth while on a call with her boyfriend. And we covered that case a while back, like a couple years ago, either in season 2 or season 3.
Yeah, but wasn't there some level of stalking involved with that, too?
No.
Really?
Well, not her, because they might have been stalking the girl that they thought they were kidnapping, but
well,
no.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm saying crazy things have happened.
Sure.
And Angela Hammond has also never been found.
Right. But again, that was in a relatively rural place.
It was. It was rural. And
it was at night.
It was at night. It was late at night.
Versus
like the streets
city
were
streets.
Empty.
Yeah,
yeah.
Versus city streets in broad daylight.
Yeah.
And no witnesses came forward to say anything.
Right.
It just seems unlikely.
Of course, some people argue that it is possible that Byron decided to run away and has since started a new life where he has had no communication with his friends or family for the past 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously seen that in other cases, but typically those are adults who go off and start their new lives and not 17-year-old kids with the bright futures ahead of them.
Right, but we just recently, a couple weeks back, covered the case of Tyler Christensen, which some theorize that's exactly what he did, and he was a teenager as well.
Not saying it's outside of the realm
right,
of possibilities,
right.
But it's unlikely. I don't know.
There were a lot of indications that Tyler did leave on his own. You know, like he did have a backpack with him, and you know he bought a ferry ticket. Like there were signs.
Yeah.
Here, there's nothing.
Right.
Byron seems to have been a happy teenager with many things he was looking forward to in his future. These are not the usual hallmarks of your average runaway teen, where we typically see a troubled home life and no plans for the future. There's also the fact that Byron seems to have left all of his possessions, including a stash of money that he was saving at home. If Byron had truly been a runaway, one would think that he would have, at the very least, taken some of his possessions and, more importantly, his money.
The money, right.
But again, because he's never been found, we can't entirely rule out the theory that he voluntarily ran away. As long as he remains missing, there will always be the possibility that he did leave of his own volition, no matter how unlikely or how out of character it may seem. After their son's disappearance, every passing week seemed to bring a new reminder to the pages that Byron had still not been found. Every time they opened the mailbox, it seemed as though there were new acceptance letters to universities, each one of them representing the bright light of a possible future that had been needlessly and cruelly snuffed out. Then came one of the hardest things the pages said they ever had to do. They got a call from Byron's high school asking them to please come in and empty out his locker. This was a devastating moment for his parents, one that, perhaps in their minds, solidified their son's fate. To the outside world, Byron was gone, and it didn't look like he was coming back. The first and really only national attention that Byron received came the year after his disappearance in 1993, when he was one of the 36 missing children who were featured in the music video for the Soul Asylum song, Runaway Train.
Oh, wow.
So he was one of the missing kids from that video. Three versions of the video were shown in the U.S., and separate versions were made for Great Britain and Australia, featuring children missing from those locations. As of 2021, according to the video's director, 26 of the children featured in those videos had been located, but Byron was not among them. There have been several alleged sightings of Byron over the years, but none of them have ever been verified. It's been over 30 years since Byron disappeared from a Los Angeles bus stop, and there have been few clues in this case. This has deeply affected the Pages, as you can imagine. They say that uncertainty is another reason why their eldest son hasn't been able to heal from the sudden loss of his brother. Jetty told reporters, quote, "I guess it's just hard for him to say goodbye," end quote. The Page family hasn't spoken out much over the years about their son's disappearance because some things are just too painful to talk about. Byron Page has been missing from Los Angeles, California since January 29, 1992. He's a black man with black hair and brown eyes. At the time of his disappearance, he was about 5 feet 8 inches tall and 160 pounds. He was last seen wearing black pants, a blue and white jacket, and a blue baseball hat. Byron was 17 when he went missing. He would be turning 50 right after this recording in September 2024. If anyone has any information on the disappearance of Byron Eric Page, please contact Detective Tamara Abraham at the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department at 323-890-5500. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher, with additional research by Nikki Elmas. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.